And I have on the phone with me Margot Bennett. Hi, Margot.
Hello.
Hi, and you're with Women Against Gun Violence. Well, is there a Men Against Gun Violence?
Well, we were founded in 1993 by feminist Betty Friedan and Anne Rice Lane, who was the first Los Angeles woman police commissioner. And they saw gun violence prevention as a woman's issue. But, of course, here we are in 2013, and both men and women who are on our board and who volunteer with us all the time work together to prevent gun violence in our communities and across the country.
Fantastic. Yourself, what brought you into this as the executive director? You obviously must have quite a track record.
Well, in the 1980s, there was a terrible gun massacre in San Ysidro, California, at a McDonald's.
Oh, yes.
And the youngest victim was just 8 months old. Mm. And for me, that was really the moment when I decided that I had to be involved in gun violence prevention. And I just have been with Women Against Gun Violence for 2 years as their executive director, but I've worked on the issue for many years.
Hmm. Right now, well, it was up to the last week until we've been swamped with sort of more not-so-important issues, you might think. But gun violence, obviously, after Sandy Hook and some of the other massacres, has taken a bigger turn up in the public consciousness. And now, obviously, Sandy Hook, at that point, how did Women Against Gun Violence say on that particular event? How do you approach that?
Well, I mean, it's just horrifying. But according to our count, there were over 12 gun massacres in 2012, culminating with the Sandy Hook terrible tragedy. And then, of course, there are the 1,000 people a day, I mean every single day, who are directly affected by gun violence in our country, assault, suicide, accidental shootings. And so it was a horrible, horrible day, but one of many horrible days for Women Against Gun Violence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know, but since Sandy Hook, over 71 children under the age of 12 have been killed by guns.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's horrifying. And about 35 of those, maybe a little less, are accidental shootings.
Mm.
Carelessness on the part of the gun owner.
Yeah. So.
So all those responsible gun owners, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't even know where to start, honestly. There's just so many.
Right. I mean, where can you start when the cry from people who believe that nothing should have any kind of impact on their gun ownership speak frequently about how responsible they are, and then we know that about 35 children under the age of 12 have been died due to irresponsible gun owners just since Sandy Hook.
Well, exactly, isn't it? It's that, you know, the only, was it, way to fight it, you know, a bad person with a gun is a good person with a gun, but I think that's a little too gray, isn't it,
yes.
That distinction?
Well, right. I mean, because, you know, good guys with guns aren't necessarily good guys with accurate shooting,
right.
With enough training. Just because you're a good guy doesn't mean you should own a gun.
Right.
Or that you're a hero.
Right.
I say get over the hero fantasy.
Well, I mean, I came from, you know, from England, and obviously I've been over 30 years now, and I still don't get it. guns. Somehow we did without them in England. Nobody was, it didn't hurt people too much, as far as I can tell. So it obviously it's such a different history here. How do you battle that history, the Wild West,
But see, that's the thing. That is not an accurate history.
Mm.
There really is no such thing as the Wild West, except in Hollywood.
Mm.
Towns in the West had very strict gun control. Mm. You had to check your guns in with the sheriff. There were signs outside town saying no guns allowed. I mean, stricter gun laws in the West as it was developing than there are now. And one of the reasons why everybody knows about the shootout at the OK Corral is that it was so rare that it, garnered a lot of press for the time because things like that never happened.
Wow. Well, you really turned things on.
Right.
On
well, I mean, that whole Wild West thing is really just a product of Hollywood. And, and people who want to hold on to their guns no matter what the facts are, no matter what the statistics show, no matter what the damage is to their own families, to the community, and to our country. It's despairing.
Yeah, it is. And, I say, how many guns are enough? And again, it's that whole thing goes back to obviously the Second Amendment and that militia thing. And I don't see people in militias. People seem to be just in their own home. That's not a militia, is it?
Well, no, it isn't. But the Supreme Court in the Heller decision overturned, 70 years of precedent.
Mm.
This is a very radical, conservative court.
Mm-hmm.
And which I always laugh because conservatives are always so concerned over a radical liberal court. But this court overturned over 70 years worth of precedent that found that the Second Amendment referred to militia and said that, no, it meant that individuals had the right to own arms. But what it also said was that we have a right to regulate them.
Mm.
And that's the part that gun enthusiasts conveniently overlook. So all they hear is, shall not be infringed.
Right.
But it doesn't really matter what the Second Amendment says. It only matters what the Supreme Court says it says.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
They make the ruling.
They get to make the ruling.
Yeah. So when did gun laws change? Where did that switch? Was after the NRA came into being? What was that progress?
Well, actually, the NRA used to be made up of hunters. Mm. Not that I support hunting personally, but it was made up of sportsmen, of hunters, and they supported gun legislation and gun regulation, and in fact supported background checks, supported the regulation of military-style weapons. I mean, there's a reason why you're not allowed to own a machine gun. That is a law that passed Congress with the support of the NRA. But in the 70s, there was a coup, and mainstream sportsmen and hunters took a back seat to this very radical Second Amendment crowd.
Mm.
And that's really their whole issue. If you ever have an opportunity to do some research on the NRA, you can see old pictures of their marketing materials, and never was the Second Amendment mentioned, ever. But then once the 70s came about and there was this shift headed by Wayne LaPierre, all of a sudden all their marketing materials, their website now, everything, Second Amendment, Second Amendment, all the time.
Mm. So this point, was this when the big money from the gun manufacturers came into play, or was that later?
I think it was probably around the same time. And I think we have to be very clear that the NRA is a marketing arm of gun manufacturers, and I think we need to change our strategy a little bit. When the tobacco industry was under fire, the Senate and the House didn't call smoker associations to come talk. They called the actual tobacco industry to come. And I think that's what our representatives need to do now. Instead of having the NRA testify at the Senate hearing, Senator Feinstein and her committee members should have called the gun manufacturers to the table and let them explain why they continue to develop more and more lethal weapons with fewer and fewer safety measures.
Well, can you maybe explain the categories of guns that are and aren't illegal? I know California, we have a little more gun control than the federal laws. Can you give us some idea of where we're at and what's being controlled? And
well, here in California, you're right. We have really excellent laws, and we've had a ban on assault weapons. And there's a long list of names and descriptions, but they've been banned in California since the 90s, maybe late 80s. However, that was just an opportunity for gun manufacturers to do a little tweaking, and they came up with something they called the bullet button, which used a tool, a bullet, to release the magazine so that it could be changed out, but not by hand, with a tool, a bullet. And that circumvented the assault weapons ban in California. And so what they did is they started marketing weapons that had been illegal here, but now refer to them as California compliant. However, we're taking care of that. There's a group of bills called the LIFE Act in California working its way through the legislature now, and one of them takes care of the gun manufacturer's circumvention of the assault weapons ban. And one of the other pieces of legislation in that LIFE Act is licensing and requiring background checks for ammunition purchases, which I think totally makes sense. But I do want to say, and I feel like I'm taking up the whole conversation.
No, this is great. you're the expert.
But I mean, one of my friends who's a gun owner, and I do have many friends who own guns, and one of them said to me, there are so many laws. Why do you need so many laws? And this is why. Because they know what the intent of our laws are, and yet they deliberately circumvent them, requiring us to then come up with a law to stop that circumvention, and then they'll do it again and again.
Right.
And federally, for example, with this watered-down background check that actually failed, even though it was already watered down, and they're working on watering it down further. But let's say this...
It'll be homeopathic gun control.
Right, exactly. So let's just say this watered-down background check passes and gets signed into law, which I can't see happening, but let's say it does. Of course, it won't be effective or as effective as it could have been because it's been watered down. And so then when gun enthusiasts say you don't need more laws, they don't work. Well, they don't work because we've watered them down.
It's just lip service, in other words.
They're strategic geniuses.
Yeah. How to do something without actually doing anything.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I haven't given up hope, and Women Against Gun Violence hasn't given up hope, but I think our feeling is that when 90% of American citizens believe that there should be universal background checks, we don't have to compromise.
Right, exactly, exactly. If that's not clear, I don't know what.
Well, it actually is. Not clear, I guess, to our Congress, right?
Well, that's it. You can tell us something about what just recently happened. We're speaking with Margot Bennett of Women Against Gun Violence. And, just a couple of weeks ago, that embarrassment on Capitol Hill.
Oh, my God.
I just don't even know what to say about what happened.
Well, you can say what Patricia Mace, one of the heroes of Tucson, said. Shame on you.
Yeah.
Shame on you. And that was the watered down version. The watered down version.
And that was what didn't even get to be discussed.
I know. People are saying, that watered down version didn't pass. No, that isn't what happened. What happened was that watered down version didn't get a chance to even be discussed.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you how we've given up on the process when we can say that it didn't pass, when that isn't really what happened. It just wasn't even allowed to come up for a vote.
Well, that's it. I mean, really, it's, you literally have to take your business elsewhere if the government's not going to help.
There's 2014.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And states across the country, I mean, even conservative states, are really taking a serious look at gun regulation. The problem is that we're not surrounded by moats. And so here in California, where we have wonderful gun regulations, we have neighbors like, Arizona, Nevada, just, the western states that, are doing crazy things.
Yeah.
Doing crazy things.
Right. There was that thing about, bringing guns in from Nevada and things. It just seems to be, the borders are a sieve, obviously.
Right. Right. And we're not talking about the border between Mexico.
Right.
Because really, we're flooding Mexico with our weapons.
Oh, my God.
We're flooding Mexico. And, their gun violence is a product and a gift from us. A terrible, terrible one.
Mm.
Right, and didn't the shooter in Norway actually get his ammunition from us?
That I don't
online,
know.
Online, I think.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least. And
what a wonderful country we are. Just providing the weapons of death, not only here, but around the world.
Well, that's it. Do you track the exports we do? How do you track what's going on outside?
Well, we actually don't track. Women Against Gun Violence doesn't track exports, but the import-export was pretty strong under President Bush. Presidents can strengthen and weaken that on their own. So those rules were pretty strong under Bush. I'm not quite sure how they are now.
Okay.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. Now, do you get to speak with politicians, with senators and representatives? Do you put forward your views? And if so, I'd love to hear how they speak to you and then go vote another way.
Yeah. Well, we have a speakers bureau that's made up of survivors of gun violence. And so that's people that have lost someone to gun violence or have been shot themselves. One of our speakers, and actually also he's a board member, is Josh Stepakoff, who's 20 years old now, but was shot with an assault weapon when he was 6 years old at the Jewish Community Center shooting in the late 1990s in the North Valley, North San Fernando Valley.
San Fernando, yeah.
Right. And so he was in Washington, D.C. recently for the State of the Union, and he made the rounds. And, and he talked to our legislators, and they listen. And but that doesn't mean that they necessarily vote that way. I mean, didn't Senator Flake, is he from Colorado? I think he's now like the most hated senator in the United States, actually told one of his constituents that he was going to vote for the universal background check. She was a survivor of gun violence, had lost, I believe, her son at the Aurora movie theater shooting.
Mm.
And when asked, he promised her that he would vote for the universal background check, and then he didn't.
Mm.
He voted against discussing it. And so his polling numbers have plummeted,
mm.
as have many of the senators who voted against discussing.
Exactly. Now, obviously, we've got elections coming up next year. So as an organization, how are you preparing for that and to bring the issue to the fore in that run-up to the election?
Well, we actually don't do political work.
Okay.
But we do suggest, one of the things we always say is that your vote is more powerful than bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we say to gun enthusiasts is that you do have a chance to overthrow our tyrannical government, mm-hmm. actually, every couple of years. All you have to do is vote the bums out.
Right.
Right?
That's
you
true.
Don't need assault weapons. You don't need to stockpile weapons. To get rid of a tyrannical government. It's one of the things that makes our country great. And so we encourage people to vote. We don't tell them how to vote. But we certainly believe that gun violence prevention should be a consideration.
Yes, indeed. You know, numbers, just can you remind us how many people a year are dying from, over the country, dying from gun violence and injuries and things like that?
Well, over 30,000 people a year, over 30,000 people a year in the United States.
Wow.
But this is a number that I repeat frequently. I think people are stunned to know it, and that is 1,000 people a day. Directly affected by gun violence in our country. That does not include the grieving families, the friends, the community. It's purely people that have been directly affected. So it's the number of people each day killed by guns in homicides, suicides, and those great accidental shootings.
Right.
And then it's over 200 people each day that are shot and injured.
Mm.
And then over 700 people a day who are victims of armed robbery or aggravated assault.
Right, with the threat of a gun, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, that's a mind-boggling number. One in five people knows someone who's been affected by gun violence. How have we come to this?
Yeah,
how have we come to this?
I know. I've had two friends murdered and another seriously,
I'm
injured.
Sorry.
So I do understand. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want, when I send my children out, I don't want to worry that they're going to be shot. And why should I have to worry? Why should anyone be concerned about going to a movie theater or a shopping mall or, you know, sending their child to elementary school?
Well, that's it. That was the unbelievable thing about, you know, the pushback was to arm schools, you know, teachers and things. I mean, it was so mind-boggling that somebody would even say that with a straight face. It was just, to me, amazing.
Right. And I think, actually, after that was out there and really just elevated that whole side to objects of ridicule, you don't hear too much of it anymore.
Well, true, but
I mean, it was stunning that that was the response because, you know, I've always thought that more alcohol was the solution to drunk driving, and I've always thought that more smoking was the answer to lung cancer, and so absolutely, it makes perfect sense.
Beautifully said. Oh, dear, interesting.
I think what Americans really need to understand, and really what I'd like the world to know about us, that this is a very small group of people that's holding most of us hostage through our legislators.
Yeah.
And most Americans don't believe they need a gun.
Right.
And most Americans do not support people walking around with guns. And it's just such a small group. People frequently ask me about the culture of violence in the United States. And what I always say is, I don't think we have a culture of violence. I think we have a culture of marketing fear.
Mm.
I don't think we're any more violent than any other country. I just think a small group of people have been preyed upon through efforts to market fear.
Mm. Well, we're speaking with Margot Bennett of Women Against Gun Violence. And now you're based in L.A., and there's quite a bit of gun violence down there, to say the least, from, freeway shootings to gangs. There's so many different ways. How do you approach that and of the different ways of gun violence? And then really, the second question after that is, how do people get involved and do something about it?
The city of Los Angeles has a wonderful program. It's called the GRID program, Gang Reduction Youth. You think I'd know that, but off the top of my head, I'm one of those people that succumbed to initials. So it's the GRID program.
Yeah.
And it's in the Los Angeles City. And they really work on intervention and programming. And so, for example, during the summer when youth is not in school, there's a whole evening program of concerts and activities to keep kids busy. And actually, gun violence has decreased substantially in Los Angeles. And our gun buyback program, very successful, and sponsored by Ralph. I want to give a big call out to Ralph. They sponsored the program in 2009 at its startup with a grant of $50,000. They've continued to support the Los Angeles City gun buyback program, and we're actually honoring Ralph at our brunch on Sunday as, you know, a responsible corporate citizen. Unlike the gun manufacturers, there's a responsible corporate citizen like Ralph. Why is the rate going down?
Yeah.
Well, because we have fewer guns on the street. Los Angeles City has strict gun laws. They, in fact, just passed a ban on the possession of high-capacity magazines.
Hmm.
Not just the sale, but the actual ownership. So you can buy them in other cities where they're legal, but if you're caught here, not so good. So, but once again, L.A. City, high population, high density, unemployment rates, significant. And all of that leads to violence. But, we're proud of our chief of police, Charlie Beck, and proud that gun violence is on the decline. I mean, will we ever get rid of gun violence completely? No.
No. But you pointed out an interesting point. We don't have to wait for the federal government or the state even. It sounds like city and counties can really do some powerful things.
They can. But there's a certain law where some states have it and some states don't. And some states like Florida have a law where local municipalities can't have stricter gun laws than the state. And because of that, when the state passed that ridiculous Stand Your Ground law, some local municipalities in Florida had to accept that law, even though they had stricter ones in place. So, it varies from state to state. And And it varies from city to city. We do believe that we need a federal solution because it's a national problem and it crosses borders.
Right.
So we, you know, we're plugging ahead through many methods. I mean, legislation is just a part of it. I mean, we have programs where we go out to schools. We have a great program where we work with parents about talking to their kids and talking to their neighbors about guns. We've given out over 700 free gun locks this year because we recognize people have guns, but we just don't want any of those accidental shootings.
Right. So, so there's many different ways to really help.
Yes.
Make a little different, you know, just chip away at it, really, is what you're saying, is just take a chunk here and there to work at it.
Right, and young people aren't that interested in guns. And so we're looking forward to the generational shift.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I haven't heard that fact. Any reason?
I don't know the reason, but, I mean, the millennial generation, which is 1983 to 2003, is the largest generation that the United States has ever known. And it's the most diverse, ethnically diverse. And they're very communicative, mostly through social media. And as a group, not that interested in guns. And so, you know, we're plugging away over here, but really what we think is that there'll be a big generational shift and that this fear-mongering that's going on is really like the last hurrah.
So get rid of the old dinosaurs and...
me included.
Yeah.
I'd go willingly if I thought we could have a really peaceful society.
Oh, yes, indeed. And, what's it, I mean, on a broad view, what's it going to take? I mean, really, who's got to stand up? I mean, apart from all of us, are there, you know, certain people in Congress we can approach? I mean, who if we want to do something, what should we do as an individual?
As an individual, I think you have to reach out to your representatives and let them know what you think. Really, you need to share. And, I mean, even if you think everybody should have a gun, right, you need to call your representative.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. The burden is on us as individuals. It is on us. So there are 70,000 people that attended the NRA convention in Texas. And those are the same 70,000 people who are calling and writing their legislators, who are marching, who are showing up at events, who are the same people who are planning this July 4th march into Washington, D.C. with loaded weapons.
Oh, no.
When, of course, all of our legislators will conveniently be home in their safe little state. But in any event, it's only 70,000 people. And there are so many more of us.
Yeah.
So the burden is on us. And we need to act. It's nobody else's responsibility. I always say, are you going to act now before the next death, or are you going to act after it? And I think we need to act before.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It is, unfortunately, it's an inevitability. It does happen, just like tornadoes or any natural disaster. It seems these ones, man-made ones, seem to happen, and we just have to hold our breath until the next one.
But we can do something.
Yes.
So we have to make ourselves heard. I want to encourage people to email us
good.
At WAGV, that's Women Against Gun Violence, at WAGV.org, and ask to be put on our action alert system. Because once a week we send out an action alert letting people know what's going on across the country, what activities, what marches, what rallies, what laws are coming up, what's being discussed in communities, where there are vigils, who's decided what, you know, then people can choose how they want to act and what they want to do. They can follow us on Facebook. We post frequently, I'd say several times a day, about activities and articles. I mean, every day we read probably every publication available and post relevant articles constantly. And so if people really want to stay informed and really want to make a difference, the burden is on us and we can do it, but you have to step up.
Indeed. And are there any important events coming up you'd like to let everyone know about?
I would. Yeah. Actually, I'd like to let people know that we're having our 19th annual Courageous Leadership Awards brunch this Sunday in Hollywood, California, on Vine Street at the Taglian Complex. And we're honoring Patricia Maish and Daniel Hernandez Jr., two of the heroes of Tucson. And we're honoring Ralph Grocery Company, who support the gun buyback program here in L.A. And we're honoring community activists, Sari and Erin Eshman, and Juliet Lefwich, who's the legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. So it's going to be an amazing program, and we encourage people to attend.
Yes, indeed, and definitely sign up with Women Against
Please
Gun
call
Violence.
Ahead.
Yes, yeah, and have a great time down in Hollywood.
Yes.
Well, Margot Bennett, Women Against Gun Violence. Well, thank you so much for your input on this really serious and important issue, and we wish you the best. Keep working hard on it. We all need you.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity, and we need you to work with us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Margot.